Bob Summers, Reel 1. So can you tell me, first of all, where you were born?
At a village called Lapworth, which is about 10 miles out of Birmingham, still in Warwickshire.
Mm-hmm. And what were your parents doing?
My father was a schoolmaster, and, well, that was it. Mm.
And did you have siblings?
I've got a sister, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you went to school locally?
I went to Warwick School, which is our local, well, I like to think our number one school.
Was that a grammar school?
Or? Well, basically, yes. They called itself a public school, a minor public school, I think they, well, it is, but it's a very good school.
Mm. Were you a day boy?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, as you grew up into, so as a teenager, did you take any interest in the military?
Yes, because at school in those days we had what was called an OTC, and I was a big performer in the OTC, and I think that's why when I eventually joined the army, I was very, I won't say rapidly commissioned, but I was in line for going through the motions to be commissioned.
What sort of things did you do in the OTC?
Well, it was sort of infantry training, but looking back on it, I suppose it was. Yes, that's just what it was.
Was it very much sort of First World War style?
Oh, absolutely, yes, yes. Yes, and we went to one or two camps where it was all, as you say, the Bren gun was just coming out then, and so it was shown with great pride, this is our new weapon.
Yeah. What's your date of birth?
1923.
Yeah, and the day and month?
14th of September.
Right. Okay. So, what age did you leave school?
When I was about 17, almost 17, I suppose. And then I was articled, which is, I've got in this piece of paper here, I was articled to the Borough Surveyor at Leamington as a civil engineer, and I was an articled pupil, for which my father had the pleasure of paying £500, and of which I never received a penny while I was a pupilage. And the war had was just starting then, and a lot of this staff had gone, and so by the time of that I was an articled pupil, which was for 2 years, I was really an unpaid assistant doing things which other people should have done, and really not learning much about my profession. Mm. But I finished up a very good draftsman, put it that way. And and then, because of that, and that was one of the things which was one of the reasons why I joined the 53rd Division so late, was that I was deferred for a year on account of my articles. Which, and then, of course, after that, I went to and joined Messrs. George Wimpey on building aerodromes for three or four months, and then I was eventually called up.
Right. So, did you ask for your call up to be deferred?
Or? Oh no.
No, it just was no. Because of what you do.
Mm.
So you got your call up papers. Can you remember them arriving?
No, not particularly. No. Yeah.
What did you feel about joining up?
Oh, well, you see, our generation were brought up, well, all my school life I knew it was only a matter of time before I'd be in an army. You see, we were children of after the First World War. And, you know, Remembrance Day was quite a thing in those days. And so you sort of felt that war, sooner or later, was inevitable. Then, and of course, Hitler came along. It became more and more inevitable. And for instance, in 1938, we all trooped up to somewhere and started assembling gas masks. So you see, we all knew that sooner or later we'd be in the army. It was fait accompli, and consequently, to be quite honest, I don't think we paid much attention to our education, because we thought it's only a matter of time before we'll be in the army.
Were you excited or pleased at the prospect of joining up?
No, I just thought it'd be a part of life, because we all grew up to thought, well, that's a part of your life, to be in the army and go and fight a war, sort of thing. Mm. But you never thought really about it, but it's just the way of life.
So where did
just the way kids today think they're going to be pop stars or something, I don't know.
So where did you have to report to?
Ah, I can tell you a long story about that. Well, to Beverley in Yorkshire. And can I tell you a story?
You can, yes.
About the. It's quite amusing, really. To get up to Beverley in Yorkshire, I had a local train to Birmingham, where I got on the train to go to Birmingham. When I got to Birmingham, there was a chap pacing up and down the thing, which I knew and had been to school with. And I said, "Are you off? I suppose you are you off to Beverley?" He said, "Yes." So we got in the carriage together. We went to Beverley. And when we got to the station, we got jumped into the same truck, and we finished up in the same barrack room. And we eventually, in those days, of course, like it was two-tier beds, you know, one at the top, one at the bottom. And that night, the old sergeant came round with his piece of paper and to check who was there. And he said to me, "And what's your name?" And I said, "Summers." And he said to the chap at the top, "What's your name?" He said, "Winters." "Are you trying to take the mickey out of me?" And that was a fact of life. One of these things you remember.
Yeah. So what was the barracks like for you?
Oh, Victorian barracks, you know. There were about 50 men to a room, and about three cold water wash basins in the went off the stairs between the four rooms. Very hard life. Never, in fact, the training in the army was damn sight harder than ever the war itself, because you were a bit you could look after yourself when you got a bit more involved with it.
So how did you take to it? I mean, you'd had
Oh, I
some
accepted
experience
it.
in the OTC,
I accepted it.
yeah.
A lot of, I well, I say, I, you just thought this was a part of life. So it was tough and hard, and these training places were very vicious and nasty, but you accepted it.
What equipment did they issue you with, and uniforms and so on?
Oh, well, that was sort of the standard stuff of the time. Yes, yeah, so there was nothing wrong with that.
Do you remember what equipment you had? Did you have it? Were you
Well,
issued equipment?
it was the same that was through the whole of the army at that time. Because, see, that was the end of 1943, you see.
Right.
Beginning of 1943, and it was pretty well established what was happening by that time.
So what sort of training did you do there, first off?
Well, you know, first of all, you did this square bashing, and then you fired your rifles on a range, and then you did courses. It was just infantry training for, I think it was 6 weeks.
What were the sergeants and the NCOs
Oh,
like?
most of them were nasty little men, because they were in a training place, and the smaller they were, the nastier they were. But I say it was a part of life, so they chased you up and down, but it didn't worry me.
Can you remember any of them in particular?
Well, yes, I can't remember their names, though. You look back and you think, God, if I'd only been a bit wiser at the time, what you would have done and what you wouldn't have done. But of course, I say, you're like sheep in the fold, and you just did what you were told.
What sort of techniques would they use to sort of bash you into shape?
Well, the first night we got there, to get complete subservience to their wishes, I think there were about, we'll say, 40 or 50 in this squad that I was in. You got on your hands and knees in a row, and you walked across the parade ground, ostensibly looking for matchstick ends. And that was about 70 yards wide, a big parade ground. When you got to the other end, there are still some matched ends left there. Go back again. So by the time you'd done that twice, you were putty in their hands, you see. And that's the way it worked. But I, considering, you know, in retrospect, the fact that they'd got to get all these recruits, half of them which didn't want to go anyway, sorted out and made to do what they're told, that it was an old established system which had worked presumably in World War I and it well worked in World War II.
So, what were your fellows in that squad like? Were they all from a similar background to you?
No, mostly in brackets so-called working men, you know, or boys of course.
How did you get on with them?
Oh, all right, yeah.
You had someone from the same school?
No, no. Well, of course, I had this pal. Yes.
So did you two sort of stick together a bit?
Well, I suppose so, because he'd been thrown out of the Air Force because he'd landed an aeroplane on a tree or something in his training days, and they said he was unsuitable for material for a pilot, so he got thrown out, and eventually he was obviously recalled up again in the Army.
Yeah. Do you remember the date you went to Beverly? Or?
Can't I know.
It was early.
It was in about April. Oh, yes, it was April.
April 43.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. So at the end of your 6 weeks training, what then?
Well, then I had a bit of leave for a week or think, and we were finished up at Aldershot, Gibraltar Barracks, which was the engineer training battalion,
right.
3 TBRE.
Mm. So you'd actually joined the engineers when you joined up, had you?
Yes.
Yes.
No, I hadn't, no. You had various tests, and of course with my civil engineering background and inclinations. Obviously, from these tests, they said, "Ah, this bloke's a round peg for a round hole." So we put him in the engineers.
Mm. Right. So you were quite pleased.
Oh, of course. Yes, I wouldn't have thought of going anywhere else. No.
So when you got sent to Gibraltar Barracks, that was to the engineers.
Yes.
Yes. Which.
Which again, in those days, was just a similar old Victorian barracks, like the one at Beverly. There were. And it's gone now. As a matter of fact, strangely enough, my son, when he was half colonel, his unit was 3 TBRE Gibraltar Barracks.
Oh, right, yeah. What regiment were you put in when you went to Gibraltar Barracks?
Well, it's not. It was just a training battalion. Yeah,
the
third training battalion, yeah.
The third training battalion. Okay, yes, we're very hot on which.
Ah, yeah. And with it, alongside, in those days, the sappers had trained drivers separately from the rest of the crowd, and these two units were both in the same block of barracks.
Mm. Right, so here your sort of army engineer training started.
Yes, right? Yeah. Yes.
So what did they start teaching you there?
Pardon?
What did they start teaching you?
Oh, well, you know, all the things the sappers had to do was building bridges, rope work, tying knots, mine clearance, and all the things the sappers do. You got your basic training there.
So was this mostly classroom?
Oh, no, it was mostly out in the... we used to march out from the barracks about 2 or 3 miles every morning to a training area outside Aldershot, which... Beacon Hill. No, that was at Newark later. Anyway, it was about 3 miles march every morning, which was, and we had a day out there and training, doing all the various field works which the engineers got involved in, and then march back at night.
Mm. So, did you get a sense that they were teaching you techniques and skills in particular? Abilities that were being used in the field at the moment.
Oh, of course, yes. I mean, what you did after that, it was just a practical application of what you did there. It was very practical, the whole thing.
Mm. And you found it to be very appropriate, did you?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
On the ball with
yes,
the
oh, yes. Yes.
What did you feel about your the abilities they were teaching you? To deal with what you're going to have to meet. Did you feel you were getting good training that you'd be able to handle the mines?
Well, of course, you can't look into the future. You don't know. You learn what you learn, and you don't know whether it's good or bad, because you don't know what you're going to be involved in, do you?
Did you have a sense of confidence that you were learning?
Oh, yes. It was very good.
Mm.
I think I really, in a queer sort of way, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. What were the instructors like? Can you remember?
Oh, very good. Very good. Of course, a lot of them were really civilian works foremen with uniforms on, really. They'd learned how to do a bit of drill and this, that and the other.
Mm.
But they weren't of the military caste, put it that way, most of them anyway. They're very nice chaps, personally.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were...
And that went all the way through the engineers.
Yes, professional engineers.
Yeah.
All the way through.
Yeah.
So did you feel that you weren't... you were a little apart from the army, in a sense, I mean, or a special section from the start?
I don't think we ever thought about it, really, because you must realise that you're in your own little world. You don't know what anybody else does down the road. You haven't a clue what other services are doing or how they're doing or how it affects you. You've just got your little world and that's it. And really, that goes right the way from there right to the very end of the war. You never knew what the next people were doing, hardly.
Did you have any contact? I mean, Aldershot obviously lots of military about, with any other military...
Oh, there were some Canadians billeted next to us who had wonderful uniforms compared with ours. So there was a certain amount of exchanging or buying and purchasing done, because their uniforms were twice as good as ours. And they were a slightly different colour, of course, to khaki. But people used to use, if they'd managed to get something from the Canadians, they used to use those for, you know, walking out, which is a military term, I think.
Yeah. So did you get a chance to go outside for recreation at all, social life?
No, not at all, really. We hadn't. The only thing was that... on a couple of occasions, I managed to get my girlfriend just come and stop in the hotel somewhere or other, and managed to get out for a bit, but not very unsatisfactory.
Mm. You felt it was unsatisfactory?
Yeah. Mm.
That was general, was it? People felt they should have had a little bit more freedom in their spare time?
I don't know. You see, you just had 24-hour leave pass, and that was it. Really, in those days, people didn't question. Like, I mean, a different world today. People, anything that's done, people question. We just accepted everything as a part of life.
Yeah. What was Aldershot like as a
town? Oh, there? Terrible place, really, I suppose. Of course, it was just full of soldiers and nothing else. And the thing was, there were various canteens, YMCAs and the ones, things like that, and you worked your way around those when there was anything beneficial going, you know, one or the other. But no, of course, we didn't have any money, you know. And mind you, for £5 went a long way in those days, but we hadn't got any money to do anything very superior, you know.
So did you keep in touch with your parents at home?
Well, yes, oh yes, you know, just the odd letter sort of thing. But not particularly, no. I mean, I didn't miss not being at home. In fact, I think I was probably quite glad to be in the army, I don't know, in a queer sort of way.
Yeah. So how long were you at Gibraltar Barracks then?
Well, I did the sapper training, which lasted from about... I went about May, end of May, to the end of November. That was about the length of the basic sapper training. And then I had a week's leave in November the 20th. And we decided to get married during that leave. So we got married on that, went home, and I shall always remember... We're marching from Gibraltar Barracks right across towards Farnborough to the station at Farnborough. There was a group of us all going on leave. And we were whistling and marching and whistling as you do. And I can remember the tune to this day. It was me and my girl. you remember these funny things.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got married. This was on about the Thursday. I got back here and oh, I'll leave the telegram. Got married on the Saturday, went down to Oxford for our honeymoon on the local train, you see. I hadn't been there more than a couple of days, had a telegram: the King wants you back, they can't win the war without you. I had to go and report to the Preoctu.
Where was that?
Our honeymoon, instead of lasting a week, lasted 2 days. So you don't complain. You had your telegram away, you went. And that Preoctu was North London somewhere, something green.
Wood green?
Anyway, it was in North London there, which was quite interesting, really.
So what sort of an establishment was that?
They put you all sorts of fantastic tests and to test your brains and your mental ability and agility. And I mean, one of the things I remember, the practical thing they did, they put a man on the roof of a, striding over the roof of a house, and they said to me, get him down. You say, how do you do it? You say, you approach the situation and you've got the man down. You say, I suppose that's whether you could sort of cope with unusual situations, you see.
And how did you get him down?
Oh, I can't remember now. We got the man down anyway. And they went through all these various tests of that sort of thing, and writing tests and trade tests. And I mean, I remember I fell out. I thought I'd blotted my copybook. But I knew afterwards what the... I was at some high-ranking civil engineer chap who was one of the examiners, because he got a colonel badge or something. And he sort of said... he posed to me some problem connected with structural calculations, you see. Well, in practice, all the answers to that are in a book. You don't spend hours and hours working them out, you see. You just quickly go there. But, of course, you're supposed to know how the figures are arrived at. And he said to me, this is the problem sort of thing. What do you do? Oh, I said, I think the book was called Howard's Book, or some kind of well-known book, you see. Oh, I said, I should look up Howard's and get that. He said, you wouldn't do that. He said, you would start... And I thought to myself, by God, if somebody's shooting at you, you don't start getting a pencil and paper out and start working it all out. If you'd got the thing handed at you, you'd get the quick answer. So he didn't like that, really. And I thought, well, I've failed this lot. But strangely enough, I hadn't. And so I got in. And so then I went back... to, it was WASB, not Preoccupy. WASB, War Office Selection Board, that's what it was.
So had many of the chaps from your...
No, I was the only one.
You was picked. Yeah.
Because when I joined the R, going back into history, when I joined up as when I joined the Sappers, I had to sew on a little red star on my shoulder. And that was because I was potential officer bodies, or whatever they called the material. That's it, potential officer material. And so that was why I got called up to the...
To WASB.
Yeah, right. That was WASB, that's right, not Preoccupy.
How long were you at WASB?
Oh, it was only a couple, 2 or 3 days, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And going back to WASB there... We all went through this test, did our 2 or 3 days, whatever it was, and all went back. But just before we left, they called out one or two people. And apparently, if the results of your test conformed to a standard, that was all right, you went. But if anybody, the results were very confusing, they got them back for a second look to sort it all out.
Yeah.
So that was what I can remember of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, went back to the Aldershot, and then I did a lorry driver's training course, just to fill in the time, really. And
what sort of vehicles were you?
Oh, lorries, yeah, 3-ton lorries, yeah. And things. Mm-hmm. And I remember the corporal who passed me, I still got my army driving line. This army corporal, he was sitting in the corner of the cab, lighting a cigarette like this. He had an absolute mass of nerves. And I could drive a car before I went there. So of course, you know, being... I said, oh, I can drive. He said, I can drive a lot. He said, all right, then, get in and drive. And he sat there. And he'd driven so many people who frightened the life out of him. He was just a mass of nerves. He just sat in the corner of the lorry, puffing away at a cigarette. Anyway, I duly passed that. So, and then... what else? By that time, it would be the end of January of the next year. And I went to the Preoccupy at Rootham in Kent. And that was the worst experience of my army life. It really was. It was bitter cold. And I don't know whether you've been told about Rootham, but it was what they call the escarpment. It runs from Canterbury across towards the Downs. And it's very, very, it's a 10 miles long, but it's got a very steep side. And our camp was at the top. And we were in Nissen huts. and no heating, and it was really freezing. Snow was on the ground, freezing cold, and there were some louvres in the end of the Nissen huts, and my bed was in the front. You wake up in the morning, snow had come through, you know, down. It was freezing cold. The toilet situations, I wouldn't bear to tell you what they were like. They were disgusting and horrible. And it was, of course, this was to sort out the week from the others. And then we were running up this wretched escarpment on doing infantry training work, because it was for all services, you see, this pre-auction. And anyway, that lasted about 6 weeks. And quite frankly, it was the worst 6 weeks of my army life. And then, after that, we had a bit of leave, obviously, and I reported to the, obviously passed through, and reported to the RAOCTU at Newark.
Right. So just staying with, is it Root, was it called?
Rootham.
Rootham.
Spelled Rotham.
Right, okay.
Rotham. But it's pronounced Rootham.
Okay, so at Rootham, what sort of... I mean, you were with a different set of people there.
Oh, it was... Oh, it
what
was,
were they like? I mean...
Oh, nasty. It was run by the infantry. Sherwood Foresters, I think, ran the lot that I was involved in. When they ran the all thing, I don't know. Oh, but still, it was to sort out the sheep from the lambs, you see. And they...
your colleagues? I mean, you had a different set of colleagues, so...
Oh, I can't remember, really.
Yeah.
What happened to them?
No, but were they a different type of, you know, you were in a...
Oh, well, yes, we'd...
Hand-picked bunch,
right? Yes, we'd gone up a bit of a grade, but I never sort of came across anyone ever since, what happened to them in the end.
Did everyone pass?
Well, you never know.
Right.
You all go on leave, and what happens to them after that, God knows. I would imagine they did, because they were probably short of men at that time.
Did you see any people?
It was just I mean, D-Day wasn't so very far away, 9 months ahead, and I suppose they were wanting to fill up the numbers.
Yeah. You weren't conscious of anyone falling out or having to give up their course, because they couldn't take it?
No, not really. Mm. I don't think we knew. Wouldn't have known anyway. Mm. I mean, they wouldn't pick anybody out and say, you're out, boot them out. It'd be, they'd all go through the course, and then some would proceed, and others would go back to unit,
right.
Presumably.
So after Rootham, you went?
Went to up to Newark, where we did... Oh, it was... And Newark, it was... the first night there, again, it's always the first day you ever get anywhere that impresses you. We were all duly assembled and taken to the parade ground. And now, you were doing training parties of about 40 or 50 chaps apiece, or perhaps 40, I don't know. And the training ground from the barracks was about 3 miles away, a place called Beacon Hill. And to move from the barracks into other places, everybody rode round in cycles. So at that time in Newark, they would see parties of 40 chaps on bicycles, all over, but to organise 40 men on bicycles is quite amusing. So the first night we got there, we went back to cavalry drill. It was incredible. So we all took our bicycles, and it was just as they did in the cavalry days, prepared to mount and off. Of course, we all finished up in a great pile on the floor, you know, but that was the start of Newark. And but it was very good. We started off again. The first 2 months was infantry training. We finished up in a battle school running across Welsh mountains.
Right.
The bloke who trained that, who was the training officer stationed across in Wales, was a very unpopular man. And the party that after us actually shot him.
Bob Summers, Reel 2. So, tell me about this training that you were doing.
Oh, well, it was what was later all the same sort of commando training, really. You see, you ran around these mountains without any food, incidentally, and you slept at night under the stone walls on over the mountains without anything, pouring with rain, just sleeping underneath there. And then the last part of the trip before you, the last day of the training period, was an attack across a lake in little canvas boats with live bullets going just above your head, and at the far end you had to get out, and they knew jolly well that you'd have to drop into water up to your waist. And then that was the end of that. And then just before we came away, it was the billet was a place called Llanfair Fechan in North Wales, and they brought a landing craft round up from somewhere or other, and so we did land for jumping off landing crafts onto a beach, you know, that sort of thing. And then we went back to Newark, where there was another course, and then the next course of that, I think, was mine clearance and all that, knowing all about mines, and we did that for a couple of months.
So when you were on the mountains, you were saying that one of the instructors got shot by...
Well, not by us, but the party that followed us didn't like him and winged him in somewhere. Oh, he finished up in hospital with a bullet wound. Yes, how they... And,
what did you think about him?
I really can't. I remember his name. Well, I better not say name.
Oh, you can't do it.
Right, I can't read. I may be wrong, you see. But, yeah. But I think it was John's anyway. But I forget that.
They were tough men, were they, the instructors on that?
Oh, yes, yes. And I really can't remember a lot about it, except that it was very painful. but still, I say again, everybody had to do it. So. Oh, I do remember one funny little thing, you see. There was a...